And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, and this is Billy Frank, listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, positive talk radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is schools and sports. Each of my guests has a subject that covers either schools or sports or both. My next guest is a sports writer for the New York Times. We'll discuss what he's written about one of the least known Hall of Fame baseball players, Stan Musial, in his book titled Stan Musial, An American Life. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. George Vesey returned to where he began his journalism career, writing about sports, after 3 years of covering religion for the New York Times. Mr. Vesey has written or edited many books, some of them on sports. A few examples of his work are Joy and Mudville, A History of the New York Mets, Loretta Lynn, Coal Miner's Daughter, a bestseller that was made into a film in 1980 starring Sissy Spacek, and Martina, the autobiography of Martina Navratilova, which was also a bestseller. He collaborated with Barbara Mandrell on her autobiography, Get to the Heart, which was a New York Times bestseller too. He was awarded an honorary doctorate from Hofstra University. In 1991, he was voted the New York State Sports Writer of the Year, forget this, the sixth straight year in a row by the National Association of Sports Writers and Sportscasters. Joining us from New York. Hi, George. How are you today?
How are you today, sir?
I am terrific. Thanks so much for being my guest, because you've written a book about one of my absolute favorite baseball players, Stan Musial. Let me just highlight some of the career achievements of Stan Musial for my listeners who might not be familiar with him. Lifetime batting average, .331. Number of hits, 3,630. Home runs, 475, and that was in an era before steroids. RBIs, 1,951. He was a 24-time All-Star, a three-time World Series champion on teams in 1942, 44, and 46. The only reason that he didn't win it in 45 was probably because he was in the military. Number six jersey that he wore for St. Louis Cardinals has been retired by the St. Louis Cardinals organization, and he was a first-round inductee into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1969. But interestingly enough, he was omitted from a 1999 fan poll of the 25 greatest baseball players of all time. And that was a fact that mortified baseball commissioner Bud Selig. Ruth and Gehrig and DiMaggio were all remembered on that list. Why not Stan Musial, George?
Well, I think people have short memories. And let's face it, every generation is new. Four of the players voted in that top 25 were current at that time. Ripken Jr., Roger Clemens, Griffey Jr., and Mark McGwire. And I submit that probably not any of those four would be voted in today if you were picking the top 25, because they're not so current. So I understand that you vote for your time frame. Musial, I had a hard time getting my head around the fact that people thought Musial was the forgotten man, because when I was growing up as a Brooklyn Dodger fan, I live in Queens but very close to Brooklyn, Musial used to... Well, can I speak a little bit of Brooklynese?
Sure.
For the minute? I'm going to speak in Brooklynese just for the moment. He used to moiter us, as we said. And he hit over 400 most years against the Dodger pitching, and was such a nice guy that fans even began to make comments about him, like, here comes the man, or here comes that man, and that's how he got his nickname. He didn't get it in St. Louis. He got it from our verbally adept fans in Brooklyn.
I love it. He didn't even get his own nickname in the town that he played for, my guess.
Exactly, and I think that says a lot to it. I mean, we loved him when he came in. He played 11 games a year in the Ebbets Field and 11 more games at the Polo Grounds in New York. So when in the heyday of baseball, when we had two National League teams, he would come in and just beat our brains out. And he was so popular. A big smile on his face. He'd get to second base, and he never put down the other team, but he just enjoyed playing, and he was a good opponent as well as a good teammate. So for me, as I got older as a sports writer, I mean, I knew he was a great player, and I knew that he was, you know, I'm sure he's in the top 25 in my list, if I had a list. But the fact that other fans didn't vote for him in a kind of computerized in-the-ballpark contest made sense. However, I mean, to be fair about it, Bud Selig did have a 30-person team already set up, and they did have an oversight committee that was going to pick five totally legitimate full members of that squad, and Musial was the first guy that committee picked. You know, Bob Costas and Jaime Harrion, who used to broadcast the Dodger games. I mean, people who really knew the sport, and they picked Musial right away.
Well, that is good to know. My guest is George Vesey. George, I found it interesting in your book, you characterize Musial as the quintessential Eisenhower administration baseball star. How so?
Well, it was the post-war era, and I'm old enough to remember that. And Eisenhower now gets the rap of being this dull former general who really didn't do much and didn't have much to say. But on the other hand, he's making a comeback because people realize he was pretty wise that in those days he was sort of a liberal Republican who knew the dangers of the military-industrial complex. He could speak out to the vast majority of Americans. He's looking better all the time to a lot of people. And I think Musial was the same way, that he was a safe, nice guy. People liked him in his day, loved him in his day. Now, except for St. Louis and aging fans like myself, you know, my generation, that people don't remember him as well. So I thought it was a good time to... I use the term old masters. I said that even in pop music, there are people that you look back and you say, gee, people don't listen to them today. But if you go back and listen to their music, you know, from X number of years ago, I mean, I use Nina Simone, you know, the great, you know, protest singer of the 60s, or mm-hmm. Johnny Cash, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I say, if people go back and discover the old masters of pop music, and I think Musial fits into that blend.
Well, he does. You probably didn't know it, but Johnny Cash lived at one point in his life here in Ventura County, where you're broadcasting into, George. But
I think I did know that.
You did.
It wasn't isn't Roseanne a product of that marriage? I'm blanking on some of the details. But yes, I did know that he lived out that way.
You are a true fan. My guest is George Vesey. We're talking about Stan Musial, however, not Johnny Cash. And I want to come back to Musial because
very different people, I would have to say.
Very different people. But I want to go back to Musial's Eisenhower image. I think part of the reason that Musial is considered that way is because he was such a workman at it. I mean, he enjoyed the game, as you pointed out very clearly, but he went to the ballpark. He was steady Eddie, which was a term that was used back in the 1950s. He was consistent as the day is long. When they looked at his batting average, home and away, I think he had an equal number of hits at home as he did away. There couldn't have been a more balanced player. Talk to me about the balance that Stan Musial brought to his baseball game.
Well, he certainly he made contact with the ball. He didn't strike out much, and he did not try to hit the ball over the fence until he realized that Ralph Kiner was making more money than he was because Kiner was hitting home runs. So that, he also learned to hit home runs during World War II when he was sent out for that 1 year. As you mentioned, he was playing ball in Pearl Harbor in 1945 in service baseball, and the Admirals asked him to hit home runs, so he tried to do that. But he was a consistent player in the National League, didn't have a great World Series, but of course during the season he was terrific. He also played two positions, whatever position the manager needed him at, either left field or first base. He did not have a great arm because he'd blown out his shoulder making a diving catch in the minor leagues as a pitcher playing the outfield in his off days. But he was such an all-around player, a man with speed, a man who didn't just gawk at the ball when he hit it. He'd run hard, try to get to second or third base. And I guess the tie-in with the Eisenhower years is that he came out of the service. Now, here's a guy who comes from a Depression-era steel and zinc town in western Pennsylvania, was very happy to be making a living as a ball player. And when he came out of the service, you know, first of all, he understood because he had teammates who didn't make it back totally in one piece. Some guys got shot up. They came to spring training. And he was the epitome of the post-war American male in that he had served his country, albeit peacefully, came back, was happy to have a job, making money, supporting his family, fitting into the community. I mean, he was a man that would put up his own Christmas tree lights in the neighborhood he lived in, happy to be alive, happy to be having a job, grateful for everything he had. And that rings true to my post-war memories of the kind of America that it was in those days. I mean, I don't want to sound like an old-timer, but there was a sense of, you know, the men came back from the war, they started their families, they were good citizens. There was sort of a stability to it that, for lots of reasons, and I don't blame any one person, this is not a political statement, I don't think we have today. But Musial fit in perfectly in that post-war Eisenhower era.
He sure did. It was a kinder, gentler time. I'm talking to George Vesey, sports writer, who's written a fantastic book, Stan Musial, An American Life. And George, one of the more unique characteristics of Stan Musial as a baseball player was his batting stance. Now, he was a left-handed batter, but he kind of coiled up like a cobra waiting to hit that. So if you take a look at this, talk to us about Stan Musial's batting stance. How did he even hit the ball? How did he even see a 95-mile-an-hour fastball the way he was curled up?
It's a good question. He did coil up. He as a left-handed hitter, he peeked over his right shoulder. People had very vivid descriptions of what he looked like. You know, a lookout kid, you know, stealing tomatoes from the local, looking to see if the officer's coming down the block or whatever, you know, very imaginative sports writing at the time. But he turned his right hip to the pitcher and turned all the way around. The bat was way behind him, and he kind of wiggled his – he was a former gymnast. So to prepare himself for springing, he would sort of wiggle his butt and kind of move around in the plate. His knees were bobbing. Now, Don Newcomb, that great man that still works for the Los Angeles Dodgers, was a pitcher in Brooklyn, and, you know, terrific player, and I'd known him since I was about 10 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, just a fixture with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I asked Nuke what it was like to pitch to Musial, and he said, well, don't let that stance fool you. He said, the guy was such a great athlete that by the time that is Newcomb, was delivering the ball, the Musial was coming out of that back stance, and he was opening up, that his hips were open, his arm was coming forward, he could read the ball coming out of Newcomb's hands. I think Musial hit, 360 or 380 against Newcomb, and that was one of the lower averages against Dodger pitchers. He hit other guys more. But Newcomb said it was, and Ralph Kiner said the same thing, and Branch Rickey and Robin Roberts. I mean, I didn't talk to Rickey, of course, he's gone.
He's dead, yes.
I talked to those other three. And they all said the same thing. You don't be fooled by the batting stance, that the man was such a great athlete that he could open up and hit the ball.
Well, in the words of Vin Scully, he wore out Dodger pitching. There's no question about that.
Don Newcomb put it a little bit more vividly, but then Nuke asked me, ask him who won the game. And that was Nuke's way of saying, you know, we were the champions from 47 on. And the reason that they were champions, of course, was that that Jackie Robinson was first, and then Nuke and Roy Campanella came in. And Musial looked around in 47 and beyond and just realized that era of Cardinals was never going to win a pennant unless and until they had black players.
Right, which was the thesis of David Halberstam's book, 1964, that's the reason the injection of Lou Brock, Kirk Flood, and some of the African-American players really helped move that team ahead.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. My guest is George Vesey. George, do a little compare and contrast for me between two St. Louis Cardinal baseball greats, Stan Musial that you wrote about, and the now current first baseman, Albert Pujols. Both have played their entire careers at St. Louis. Albert's career is not yet finished. Both have batting averages that were above .330 for their careers as a Cardinal. If Albert Pujols stays on this path and stays with the Cardinals, which is a big if right now, how do you rank the two St. Louis Cardinal greats? Do a little compare and contrast.
Well, I'm going to take my cue from Pujols himself, who is a terrific person, a solid citizen. I mean, he grew up he's from the Dominican, I believe, and he grew up in Kansas City, and he's been playing in St. Louis for his entire career. Of course, Musial is Stan the man. And somebody once called, or people have called, Albert Pujols El Hombre, and he said, with all due respect, there's only one man in this town, and that's Stan Musial. He doesn't want any part of Musial's nickname or fame. And there's a picture in the book that was taken by a photographer named Chris Lee of the St. Louis newspaper on opening day a couple of years ago. It was a chilly day, and Lee caught Pujols, or captured Pujols in a photograph, tightening up the jacket that Stan Musial had. Musial's quite old and really isn't the person he used to be. He's diminished in a lot of ways. But as a younger man, as a son or grandson surrogate, Pujols was taking care of Musial as they sat on this cart about to go onto the field. And I say that picture just tells it all about the respect that Pujols has. Whatever Pujols does, and whether he stays in St. Louis or goes for more free agent money somewhere else, and, you know, that's a big, obviously an obsession in St. Louis right now, I think that Pujols would tell you that he will never, he might hit more home runs than Musial. He may never win as many World Series as Musial did. But I think that Pujols would be the one who would tell you, I will never be in this community what Musial was because he came first. And I don't think it's because of color or the fact that Pujols is Latino. I think Pujols would scoff at all that stuff. The point was, Musial got that first. He's a wonderful person, and you can't overtake an idol like that.
Ah, Well said. My guest is George Vesey. George, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Stan Musial in American Life?
Well, I'd start with the subtitle, which is called An American Life. And it was a gift to me from the editors of the book. And it is about a man who came from very hard times, whose father was an immigrant from Poland, never really acclimated in this country, had what we refer to as a drinking problem. Musial grew up without a lot of fatherly advice and supervision. I mean, the father worked, brought back some of his paycheck, but Musial looked for mentors in other places. And even growing up in a hard town, he had a lot of people to admire that you can make it from a place like Donora, Pennsylvania, where the work was hard and life was hard, and he made it out because he wanted to be. Other people have come from that same environment. It's a very good American story of a time and place.
It is, and my guest has been George Vesey. George, if people are interested by what you have to say, they want to learn more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Do you mean about me?
About you or the book, yes, either one.
Well, there certainly have been nice reviews. I mean, certainly anybody that would link Stan Musial and my name, which is Vesey, could find some of the wonderful reviews. A man in Pittsburgh wrote a lovely review. Sports Illustrated has been very generous. There was kind of a little bit snide review in the Times, although pretty fair, from somebody who thought that Musial should have been more of an activist, which wasn't exactly his
style, no.
Although he certainly was very supportive to Jackie Robinson. But I would say that sitting on the Internet, one of the things I need to do one of these days is get myself a home page. My daughters, my wife, and a friend of mine are all hawking me to get my own page. I'm too busy working for the New York Times and writing books to get too far into the social media.
Well,
one of these days, and you're very nice to ask.
Well, when you do, we'll have you back on the show. My guest has been George Vesey. George, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for being so well prepared, man.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.